My guest at this time is Grace Marie Turner. She's the president of the Galen Institute, one of the most respected healthcare policy firms in the country. She's been a guest of ours numerous times throughout this entire healthcare debate and the mounting legal challenges to it. This week, of course, the issue is front and center before the U.S. Supreme Court in four different sessions, pretty much unprecedented in recent times in the Supreme Court, and we're expecting a decision sometime in June. There were four major arguments that we'll go through real quickly here. And Grace Marie, thanks so much for your time.
It's a pleasure to be with you, and my goodness, are these interesting times. I actually spent the last 2 days watching the activity outside the court on the steps, which I think was just as quite as dramatic as what was going on inside, but perhaps not as consequential.
Perhaps correct. Let's start in chronological order here. And the first day was a discussion of the Anti-Injunction Act from the 19th century, essentially asking the question of whether this should be punted down the road until someone is actually quote-unquote injured by the individual mandate, being forced to pay a fine or a tax. The justices and the lawyers argued about whether it is a fine or a penalty or a tax. And the conventional wisdom seems to be that the court and even the attorneys have no interest in postponing this. What did you glean out of it?
There's a wonderful logic to the way that they are hearing the cases. So the first question was, should we even be hearing this? If the penalty for not purchasing health insurance is a tax, then someone does have to pay it. The penalty goes into effect January 1 of 2014, so somebody would pay it on April the 15th of 2015 when they file their taxes for that year. So that would then start the clock running on when someone could actually have standing to challenge this. Even the lawyers for the government got mixed up when they were trying to explain whether this is a tax or a penalty. And one of the justices asked the Solicitor General, is it a tax or a penalty? He says, well, it's a penalty tax. So he just, I mean, the government is in just almost an impossible position because they're trying to defend an unconstitutional law. On Monday, they're trying to say that it's not a tax. And then yesterday, they were saying it is a tax. So they said, well, which is it? Well, it's a tax penalty.
Observers seem to think that that will probably not be postponed. So then the big fight, of course, was Tuesday over the individual mandate. By most accounts, the Solicitor General did not do a particularly great job and even got some pretty harsh questioning from the more liberal justices. Grace Marie, that's obviously the linchpin here in the debate this week, although there were two important debates today as well. What's your sense? Most people from both sides seem to think that the mandate's in big trouble after yesterday.
Well, yeah, I just finished a post which people can find over at Forbes Opinion, and maybe I'll send it to you, Greg, so you can link to it, because I think people were filing their articles after they heard the first part of yesterday's argument. I listened to the whole tape last night, and I think that Justice Kennedy still has some serious questions. You know, is health care really different, which is what the government has been arguing, that health care is different because you don't know when you're going to need to engage in commerce, because you don't know when you're going to be hit by a truck and need health care. And if you don't have health insurance, then should we force you to pay for it? But the justices were asking, well, if they can do that, can't we, Chief Justice Roberts said, well, then should we require everybody to purchase a cell phone because you need a cell phone to be able to contact people in case of an emergency? So should everybody have to have burial insurance because surely all of us are going to die, and what if we can't afford to pay our funeral expenses? So they really began to take this to, you know, where does this lead if we say that the Congress can require us to all spend our personal money on a private product that's going to cost as much as $20,000 a year? When on earth would that end?
Grace Marie, it's been said so many times in the last 24 hours, never expect a decision based exclusively on the oral arguments, because a lot of the decisions are based on the written material that never gets spoken about. But what does your gut tell you right now?
My gut tells me that it's exactly as it was before, that Justice Kennedy is the key guy. And he is concerned, they're all concerned, about overturning a major act of Congress. I mean, this is something that was sweeping decades, many people would argue, in the making. But they also seem unconvinced that if they were to declare the individual mandate unconstitutional, that they should let the rest of the law stand. And I think that the attorney for the states and the NFIB did a wonderful job. Paul Clement, actually attorney for the states, did a wonderful job in saying that everything really is interconnected. The individual mandate is tied to community rating, which is tied to guaranteed issue, which are tied to the subsidies, which are tied to the exchanges, which are tied to the Medicaid expansion. I mean, everything really is tied together. And then there was a lot of banter back and forth about today about, well, do I just have to send my clerks looking through this whole 2,700 pages and try to figure out which ones did Congress mean to stand or not? And they basically said, we can't do that, which is why today there was a sense that if we declare the individual mandate unconstitutional, we may have to take the whole law down.
There were also a lot of concerns, though, from what I was reading, Grace Marie, that members of the court were very reluctant to go line by line through the legislation. But as you mentioned, the mandate is kind of the linchpin to a lot of all this. So do you think it's more likely that if they're going to take the one step, they'll take the second step, too? Or could we be left with some sort of what some are calling a zombie version of Obamacare, where all the costs are there, but not necessarily the revenue stream?
You really can't read the court's mind. I think they ask hard questions of both sides. And whenever, if you're listening to the hard questions they're asking of the other side, then you think, oh, they're with us. But then you listen to the hard questions they ask of us, and you say, oh, well, they may really still have some skepticism about this. So there's actually a provision and an amicus brief that was cited today by, I believe, Justice Alito, put together by Tom Miller from the American Enterprise Institute, that says they could strike all of Title I. That's the individual mandate, the exchanges, all the subsidies, the employer mandate. A lot of the different insurance regulations are all tied up in Title I. And we really, and that's one of their options, is to strike everything that's related to the individual mandate, leave it to Congress to figure out what the Congress meant to do as far as Medicare reforms and Medicaid reforms, and really split that off. So I actually think now that's more likely than any other scenario. I think it is. I'd give it actually better than 50-50 chance that they strike the individual mandate. And I'd give it a better than 50-50 chance that they just strike this major section of the law that involves Title I and possibly Title II, the major new spending provisions, the major new entitlement, and then leave the changes to the public programs already in place, Medicare and Medicaid, to leave them standing. I think I would, if I were to take a bet today, that's what I'd bet.
And so the Medicaid expansion would continue based on what you're thinking at this point. Last question before we let you go. If Title I is struck down and all the elements related to the mandate, how happy are you?
I think that is a huge step forward. I think that Congress has got to figure out what it's going to do with Medicare and Medicaid anyway. But this massive new entitlement program, these huge new mandates on states, on individuals and employers, those are the things that, and the spending associated with them, trillions of dollars, if we could get rid of that, then I'm willing to take it for Congress to figure out what they're going to do with Medicare and Medicaid, because they've got to deal with that anyway. And they didn't fix these two programs in this law anyway. So it gives them perhaps more of an incentive to focus on the things they can fix, and then go back and say, okay, now let's figure out what we should have done in expanding access to health insurance and making it more affordable, and that's going to involve a much larger role with the states. And let's hope, and whatever the next Congress does, that they don't have 26 states before the Supreme Court challenging their law.
Well, the fascinating part of this, Grace Marie, is that apparently at least 9 people in Washington can keep a secret, because from what we know, they will get together on Friday, actually vote, and figure out who will have the majority opinion, and then it's going to be a 3-month wait for the rest of the world.
Well, it's going to be, but Greg, it's going to be a complicated decision, because they may vote different ways on these 4 provisions. I mean, you may have a 7-2 decision, for example, on whether or not the law, the mandate provision is a tax. You may have 5-4 on the severability question. You may have a 6-2 on the Medicaid expansion. So I suspect we're actually going to have a relatively complex network of opinions, and I would be very surprised if every justice doesn't have a dissent in part and a concur in part, or vice versa. So it's going to be very interesting when those decisions come down to wade through it and figure out what on earth we have on our hands.
Busy term for the clerks, then. They got a lot of work ahead of them.
They've got, you know, after the justices vote, then the clerks, of course, have to go and start writing the decisions. And
right.
This town is prone to leaks, but I'll tell you, this is going to be the best kept secret in Washington if, in fact, it holds until they issue their decision.
Everybody holding their breath till June, most likely. Grace Marie, as always, great to have you with us. Thank you,
Greg. It's always a pleasure.
Grace Marie Turner, president of the Galen Institute, one of the most respected healthcare policy firms in the country. I'm Greg Corumbus, reporting for Radio America.